CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 132 with Dr. Guillermo Amezcua, learning incredible surgical skill for complex anterior segment surgery. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today I have a very special guest, a surgeon who we've featured here on Cataract Coach before, who just has incredible hands. Like, I wish he was in Los Angeles so I could refer all my very difficult patients to him. That is Guillermo Amezcua from Bascom Palmer in Miami. Guillermo, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure being here, a real honor.
You are an incredible surgeon. You have, by the way, you have a beautiful Instagram channel. It's called Cornea Papi. If you don't speak Spanish, you got to learn at least a few words.
There's a good story behind that.
Tell me.
I've never been someone that's heavy on social media, but my fellows some years back, actually it was a few months before COVID, they started saying, you need to share your videos and we need to have someone from Bascom Palmer be in the social media.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, well, I said, I have a Facebook page, and like, no. Facebook is, from all people. Like, you got to be on Instagram. And I'm like, all right. So I'll try to make a story short. But I decided I may do this Instagram. And one day I used to run the resident service for the cornea rotation. So they'll spend 6 weeks with me, a second year resident. And if they put an effort, I'll let them do a penetrating keratoplasty from start to finish at the end of the rotation, So I had this a really great resident. He's in Philadelphia now, Steve Moster. And he had this dark humor, and I also, and we would joke around, we'd maybe do a little heavy dark humor. I don't know if I could say things in the podcast, but anyway, it was, I'm Mexican, right? I grew up in Mexico, and that was the time Donald Trump was running for president the first time, right? So he's Jewish, so we will do some jokes that may not be politically correct, but we have fun between both of us. And he made fun of the fact that in my clinic in Miami, 90% of people speak Spanish, and he was very hard for him to like do the job. And I would say, dude, you're like slacking. You're not like, I need to do, work hard, but I can't speak, So we will be joking around that. And then when I used to go to Palm Beach, we have an office in Palm Beach, and that was the total opposite, like 90% in English, 10% Spanish. And it got to the point that, I don't know if you've been to Miami. So you come to Miami and you go by a little cafecito, at the corner store, and the lady is going to say, oh, papi chulo, mi amor, yeah, go on, stop. When I came from Pittsburgh here for my residency, for my fellowship, I had like the best self-esteem for like 2 weeks. Everyone's like, mi amor.
But even in Los Angeles, let me tell you, when I first started teaching at the county hospital, they called me papi chulo.
Papi chulo, there you go.
I was papi chulo for like 10 years until I got gray hair, then no more.
Yeah, so so I don't know if you remember your first like surgery. I think we all remember our first surgery from start to finish, and Steve did a great job, and he goes and I'm doing the surgery. This is like a Friday afternoon. Imagine like putting those 16 sutures, and I'm just like, and he finished, and I said, dude, like, great job, like you did a great rotation, and he's like, I'm so happy. And and he says, can I give you a hug? And I said, sure. And so we hug. And then he comes close to my ear and he says, so now can I call you Poppy? And Nandini Bankatesh, who is now a Massey in here, Nandini, that was the last surgery of the day. She was following up in the OR. She was the senior resident. And she's like, Dr. Amezcua, you're going to be cornea Poppy, like Drake, like champagne Poppy, So to finish the story, I don't open the Instagram because I started looking at Instagram, and I felt it was a little complicated, and you have to share a story for 24 hours or you post or anyway. So we're coming from Palm Beach. I used to go once a month, and we'll take the train with the residents and the fellows on the way back There's a really nice train called the Brightline. And they say, okay, we're gonna open it now. And you can go to my Instagram and go to the first post, and that's the video on the train. And I do the post, and it's Cornea Poppy. And I had this wonderful fellow, international fellow from Chile, Diego, who's now back in Chile doing very well. And the next day he pulls me in a room, in an exam room, and he says, Dr. Amezcua, can I speak with you for in private? And I'm like, oh my God, what happened? And he says, Dr. Amezcua, you know, in Latin America, everyone looks up to you. And he's from Chile. You know, Chile is a little bit of a different culture than
Yeah, for
here.
sure.
So yeah,
Plenos.
so he says, I don't know if cornea poppy is something that, you know, it may not be a good idea. So it
A
may be
little too
crunch.
casual. It's a little too
Yes, sir.
casual.
Yeah, maybe people are, you know, are not gonna respect. And I say, you know what? You know, thank you. It may be, you know, you may be right. So that weekend, so I go back and I change to this boring name like cornea, ocular surface, whatever. And it was boring. And I go to Faco Caribe. I don't know if you mean to Faco Caribe, yeah, in Barranquilla. And we're there in a table with Ophthalmo University. There's, you know, like Ahmed is there, and there's a bunch of people. And like, why did you change? And I told the story, and he's like, no. So Ophthalmo University, who's this group of very talented guys who do a lot of simulation, they have a lot of people. You probably know them well. And they did a post, and they did a survey, and they say, you know, boring or bring Papi back. So it was like 90%, like. So since then I kept that, and I used to make my fellows edit a video and post it, like the most challenging case of the day, and which I think is good for surgical training, that they edit their own videos and they go back and look and edit. So I, yeah, so that's the story behind the
I love it. I mean,
Instagram.
I'm from Los Angeles, so as you know, in Los Angeles, we have like you're in Miami. You have
Yeah.
Español Bueno.
Yes,
In
exactly. You
Los
have Megan.
Angeles, we have Español Mexicano or Español Chicano. It's different.
Chicano,
But for us in LA, it's like normal to say, I papi. You know, I mean,
yeah.
it's totally
I know. So yeah. So it really helped my surgical referrals, because outside Bascom Palmer, people knew me as a cornea specialist, but I really like its anterior segment reconstruction. Like I like suturing IOLs and challenging.
you like very, very complicated anterior segment reconstruction.
I enjoy the challenge, yeah. So I started getting a lot of referrals on about for that, and I think that's the that what really helped, like being outside and showing the videos,
I
and
saw
yeah.
a video of you
No.
doing a surgery of anterior segment reconstruction where you're taking salivary glands and putting them on the ocular surface. And I thought, wow, I don't ever want to do that surgery. Let me send the patient to you. You do it.
Yeah, so I did a year of cornea and a year of ocular surface and ocular surface uveitis. And during that year, my mentor Victor Perez recommended me going to L.B. Prasad, and my co fellow when I was in my cornea fellowship is Pravin Vadavalli, who's now, you know, someone that has a very important leadership position at L.B. Prasad. And he said you should come and learn from our ocular
Right.
surface. You know, there's many talented surgeons there, and they see an incredible amount of pathology. So Virender San Juan, who's no longer at LBP, and Sayan Basu, we started this connection. We, you know, I was sent there to learn CLET, cultivated limbal epithelial transplantation. Right? When I got there, like, you know, I flew 23 hours, and then like, oh, we're not doing that anymore. Like, what do you mean? This is 2011, by the way. I'm like, oh, we're doing something called simple limbal epithelial transplantation. And I'm like, what is that? Like, oh, you take the cells and
Just OT.
you cultivate in vivo and you sprinkle the cells. I'm like, nah, this is never gonna work.
It
And
works.
I know. And so I saw the post-ops,
It's
and
like
I and
magic. It's like
we
magic.
we po we published the first paper in AJO in this part of the world. And it started a really nice collaboration with Cyan and Virender. For many years, we run this ocular surface workshop at LBP, And that's where I learned. I mean, I credit to them that also Geeta Iyer from Chennai, they have so much Steven Johnson syndrome over there, and
Right.
they've learned to really help these patients with different techniques, so so that's one of the my roles that I play here, not just cataract surgeon, but an ocular surgery specialist. So I don't do refractive surgery. I mostly do, just keratoplasties, and the ocular surgery is part of it.
Yeah, so tell us your story here. So you did medical school, and then you were able to do like 6 months of your at the end of medical school, 3 months at Baylor, 3 months at Cleveland Clinic,
Yes,
and
yeah.
then you decided, you said, you know what, I want to do my resident training in the USA. Tell me the whole path. How did you decide to do all this?
Yeah, so my medical school in Monterrey, Mexico, was at that time kind of like a new medical school. And it was only I'm like class of 20 years, so it was just starting. And when they started, it's in a very big engineering school, Tech of
Okay.
Monterrey, who was founded by a very wealthy businessmen who kind of wanted to simulate the model of MIT, train their own engineers and hire them for their manufacturing. And anyway, so they hire Baylor. They hire Baylor as the medical school for to guide them through the process of starting a medical school. And because of that, a very good relationship with Baylor was started. And if you had certain grades, you could go do your medical your internal medicine clerkships at Baylor. And just like a Baylor student for 3 months, and it was just I loved it there. I found it really well organized. The lectures were incredible. The rounds, I mean, the whole experience was very
It's
academic.
a great school. Baylor's amazing.
It's a great school. And during that time, I was starting to like ophthalmology, so I will sneak into the grand rounds. And they used to have live patients. Dan Jones will put up, yeah, it, and he'll
Andy
put,
Jones, the chairman of Baylor Ophthalmology, yeah.
it was, an incredible leader in our in ophthalmology. He was chair of the AAO, I think, at some point. Anyway, so I started liking it, and then my school sent me to Cleveland Clinic, and I was able to work at the Kolar Institute there. And got a position to do research in the immunology lab with Victor Perez. Victor was just graduate. He just graduated from his fellowship and all the training that he did in Boston, and he had a lab there. I think I was the second or third person he hired in his lab.
But that's a big
And
move for you. Instead of going back to Mexico and finishing residency there, you said, I'm going to stay in the US, do a research fellowship, and then do ophthalmology residency in the USA.
yeah, I mean,
A big move.
I it was a big move. It was, I don't know. I grew up in the north part of Mexico. I grew up in Sonora, close to Arizona, right? So, I've always had contact with the U.S., and I always liked the idea of trying to study here. And almost all my professors in medical school that were doing very cool things, they had, very established practices. They all had in common that they had done a good fellowship in the U.S. or in
Right.
Canada, or yeah. So I liked that, and I gave it a try. I remember when I started working with Victor one day. I said, I gotta go back to Mexico this weekend because I have to take my exam so I can apply for ophthalmology there. Like, well, what do you mean? Like, it's like, no, yeah, I don't know. It's very difficult to match in ophthalmology in the U.S., and I gotta have a plan B. And Victor looked at me and said, people that work for me stick to plan A. You have a good
Yeah.
chance.
Yes.
So I always tell him, like, I thank you. Like, he really got me really focused on this, and we were doing really cool work. We used to do 11-0 nylon corneal transplants in mice. And
Wow. Wow.
it took me months to like really
Learn how to suture.
I didn't have any
Yeah.
training. Yeah, so
Of course.
he sent me to UT Southwestern, and they had a immunologist there that had a lab where he had a lot of technicians doing transplants in animals, and Jerry Niederkorn. was a big ocular immunologist, and I spent some time there and I learned how to handle the surgery and you know, I think all those hours under the microscope really help, you know.
You are right. You know what's funny? 22 years, I would say the mark of a good resident is a resident who can do what I called 10, 10, 10, 10 sutures of 10 on nylon in 10
10
minutes.
minutes.
On a TAO, on a grape, doesn't matter what. Can you do 10 of those? If you can do that, you will be great.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think
Little 11, you need 11 of them.
no nylon. That was, yeah, we used to inject ketamine in these mice, and then you had certain amount of time because then you'd be suturing, the thing starts moving.
That's
Yeah.
incredible. So you did your residency then in Pittsburgh.
Which I know you know VP Dali well, very well, because I
I
you should. You share some of your part, you know, you some
right.
of your sessions with her at the AAO, right?
Even in Copenhagen last weekend at the
Oh,
ESCRS, I did the best of cataract coach and DP Dhaliwal, I respect so much. She's an incredible surgeon, incredible brain. She was the one who told me the entire 90 minutes of my course, all the things I did wrong. She said, Guillermo has amazing hands. He's an incredible surgeon. So even as a resident, you had a very high level of surgical skill.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think I
Oh,
was.
I heard it from her. She told me herself.
I she's you know she's one of those like loyal mentors that. But I think you know I think I was average, honestly. Like I think
No, totally.
no really. I think
I
and
see
I
your
saw
surgery now. I see your surgeries now, and I think,
because
can I
I have
please
a
send
you
my
know
patient to him?
don't you have residents that. You know, they start really good and then they get a little cocky and then they don't like. Since I've
Yeah.
had some residents and fellows, they start really, really slow and then you know they put a lot of effort and those and then they start growing like really. I mean, I don't know. It's all
Yes,
kinds of people out
yeah.
there. I don't
Consistency is
think.
the key. Consistency is the key.
I think so too. I mean, I think there was more. When I joined the faculty, I had certain situations that happened that really pushed me to be very efficient. For example, we had one of our high volume cataract surgeons in the saddle in one of the saddle offices. He left, and my chairman told me like, "Listen, you're gonna go to do surgery there." I'm like, "No, but I'm not asking you. I'm telling you, you're gonna." So I walked in into this really busy, and you know. You have to be efficient. Like you have people, you know, patients that are asking for, you know, very high-end results, and there's no margin, especially in that area of Florida.
Oh,
It was
that
tough in
was
Palm Beach.
Palm Beach Gardens.
Yes,
I know exactly. So you did residency at Pittsburgh, and then you came to Bascom for your fellowship, and you did two fellowships, buy one, get one free.
Yes, I did. I always wanted to be a uveitis. I always li I love it like uveitis, but you know, I love surgery, so I don't know. So I did cornea, and when I was doing the cornea, working under you know Dr. Perez, Dr. Karp, Eddie Alfonso, and you know they're
Great
doing
people.
all this great ocular surface and cornea work, and I started like maybe you know. Maybe this is really what I really like, and but you know, maybe I should do uveitis. So I applied to the uveitis fellowship, and then I decided that I realized I had no more money left. So interviews were expensive, and then they told me, "Why don't you stay here?" And I work with Janet Davis. She's retina uveitis. She taught me how to do the immunosuppression and all that. But I spent half the time with her and half the time with the cornea ocular surgery service, especially with Victor. And so we were starting, he was starting a really big ocular surface fellowship, not fellowship service. He started the modified osteodontic arthroprosthesis. You know, he
Sure,
was
sure,
doing
sure.
that tooth in the eye surgery during my
Yeah.
fellowship. I was assisting, you know, we had like Professor Facinelli come from Italy here. You know, that was, we learned how to manage the mucosa. We had an OMFS surgeon with us at all times, so it was, you
All
know,
right.
It was a very good experience. It was a long 2 years, especially the second year was, but it really helped me when I joined the faculty to be, ready for the challenge. I felt, it was a stressful but very academic year.
No, I heard you were such a great fellow for those 2 years that when your fellowship was done, they told you, you can't leave. You're joining our, you're staying right here. You have to join our faculty.
Yeah, I got an offer from Dr. Forster, which one of my senior mentor. He's no longer in practice. He retired. He's still going strong, and he all gave me the offer, and yeah, I mean, I was a little intimidated, and here's this guy who had an accent and like coming from Mexico, running Bascom Palmer, but it is a great family here. I mean, you came for our winter meeting. You saw how we get along here. It's a
It's amazing.
really great place to work. Yeah.
Let me tell you, Bascom is a very special place. For the
It
20
is.
years, for the 20 years I taught at UCLA at the Jules Stein Institute, every year they would say, "How can we be more like Bascom? How can we be more like Bascom?" No,
You're making this tough.
I'm absolutely serious. And I just said, it just
No.
the issue. I mean, what you have at Bascom is people just have a passion for what they do. Like you are there to do like the most crazy, difficult, challenging cases. You say, "Yes, thank you. Please give it to me."
Yeah,
That's unusual.
and I tell the fellows, like, listen, we have all the support in the world. We have an ocular microbiology lab. We
Right.
have an ocular pathology lab with a double border, like he's
World
boarded
class.
in ophthalmology. Yeah, Sandra Dubovi. We have the retina service is so active that if we do something really stupid, they will help us, they're right there.
They'll help you the same day.
Exactly. And we have a chief, our chief resident track is, they're the second year fellows that are doing all the trauma, and it is just, the environment is it
It's
promotes that
incredible.
you feel comfortable like handling the these cases, and I felt, I mean, I also did not start like from day one doing this, it's been a slow progression. I tell
Well,
my fellows, you gotta go like in karate, like you gotta go to the green belt and then go to the brown belt, like you start tackling those sonyos when you're in black belt. You don't want to jump into the you gotta
listen,
earn
right now you are triple degree black belt.
it.
You are like
Right
amazing.
on.
But there's a reason why Bascom's been in the U.S. the top rated program for 20 years. There's a reason. I think it's a culture of just basically demanding the best and like, no, you will deliver. And then also they're smart. Bascom, it seems to me from the outside, they would rather invest money in great people instead of a new building. And that's probably better to invest in people.
Well, today I was sitting at Grand Rounds, and there were some incredible cases, and mostly discussed by people younger than me. Like I'm 46 years old, and there was this retinoblastoma case discussed by Basil Williams, and he was my resident, and he's like now a top, and there's a lot of junior people that are really strong, especially linked in the retina service. They managed to hire, like, we have Nico Iannuzzi, we have there's just a lot of very good people, and I think the services, they are ready for the next generation, because a lot of our seniors are starting to retire, and yeah,
Yeah. Well, you let me know if Bascom needs a cataract coach, because you know what I like? Now that California has 14% state income tax and Florida has zero, I'm thinking like
Zero.
Florida looks pretty nice right now.
Well, you should I'll talk to Eddie, because we are opening a new office in Aventura, and it's a state of the art. It's going to be a cataract center, so we who knows, we may have cataract coach in Florida. That'd be awesome.
You never know. Well, tell me about this. You said like every year you get more and more complicated cases, more and more challenging cases. You kind of grow into this. some of the cases you show are so they're like intimidating. How can a young person who sees your video say, "Oh my God, that's I can never do." How do they start to learn?
I mean, I think the I think you have to you know your limits, right? And I think you need to be critical of yourself, watch your videos. You need to have a plan. Like you can't just go in and like, oh, I'm gonna do this. And we also have the iBank in the
Investing.
building,
Right.
right? So I'm lucky that, you know, if I'm gonna start trying this, like for example, I the first to do DMEC here in Stride, it was Mike Bennett, and he was glaucoma cornea, and he was a outstanding surgeon, and he I was doing my fellowship, and when he left, I was like, well, I gotta give it a try. So I talked to the iBank and I said, you listen, can you know if things go wrong, can I have a backup tissue? You know,
Yeah.
so you plan your surgery, and I you know there and there's the patient at the end, like you really if you're doing I think I feel like if you prepare and you're doing the best thing for the patient and what they really need. You know, I learned, for example, that as a cornea specialist, my job is to do the least amount of penetrating keratoplasty. Like that's like the worst surgery, you know. So I've
That's a different mindset. Like when I trained 25 years ago, that's all there was PKP. And the answer to anything was PKP. But now you're saying the opposite. You're saying my last resort is PKP.
PKP is, you know, it's a beautiful surgery. It's not a very difficult surgery, but it requires follow-up. Like you need to follow these patients. They have trauma. You know what happens. Like this wounds open and there's terrible things that
Yeah.
happen. So if you have a penetrating keratoplasty and you have a rejection, then the prognosis for the next one, and then the iris starts to come in. And then it's, you know, so I think you know, you start seeing what works and what doesn't work, and so then you say, okay, well maybe I should do this cataract, and under a very hazy cornea, and then you learn how to use a light pipe, and you learn how to use glycerin, and you know,
Right.
you learn different ways to manage the. We have very good microscopes now, so you start doing those cases. Like for example, I used to do. I started with hazy cornea from corneal edema, right? You do your D6 and then start your DMEC, phaco DMEC, and then you learn to work on their poor visibility.
Sure.
But it's not, it's you can cheat by going up and phacoing on top, so you don't. But then when you start doing, for example, you have a monocular patient with pemphigoid, and you have, you know, haze and subepithelial haze, and you have
Yeah.
limbal deficiency. But then in those cases, I tell my fellow, like, don't start with those cases, because then you can be phacoing up, because you don't want to add, you know, bullous
More.
keratopathy to that,
Yeah.
right? So you want to make sure you don't break the back, because you know retina is going to be very upset that you can't see anything, and they're going to ask you for a temporary KPRO, and you have a pemphigoid patient with a penetrating keratoplasty that
Oh,
never
that's not.
works. It
Yes,
never
that's
gonna
not.
it never works. So
Yeah.
or a Steven Johnson patient with haze, you can, the worst thing you can do to a Steven Johnson patient or a pemphigoid patient is to do a penetrating keratoplasty. It's
Right.
not good.
So don't break the bag.
Exactly. So you gotta be careful with it. Yeah. Here, have a light pipe. I've had a lot of videos on that, on the use of the light pipe. I think that's and actually I learned that from a fellow. Like it was 2014. You know her well, Zeina Mokhtarseb from she was a Baylor. Now she's in private practice, and Zeina's like, oh. One of my attendings at Baylor used to put a light pipe in, and I'm like, oh, cool, let's try that. And you know, you
Yeah.
learn a lot from the fellows. So it's, yeah.
Well, that's one thing I'd always tell all the residents and fellows. If you have a different idea, just tell me. Let's try it. I'm here to learn as much as you're here to learn. So let's learn together. And if you have an idea, if you've seen something else, if you think, hey, maybe this would work, let's try it. I'm
Oh,
game.
absolutely, yeah. That's the beauty of academic, like that, you know, you I learn still, I learn a lot from the fellows, especially the ones that come from another institution. You know, they picked up stuff over there, and they teach it to us.
You know, although I'll tell you now, the most learning I do is on my phone. The amount of stuff I see on a daily basis. I mean, you know what's crazy is that in the US, one of the major ophthalmic book publishers stopped business. It's not published. No more ophthalmology books. They're like, no, it's online. Because you're not going to read a book. You can just watch a video. And they're right. I mean, half the things I learned in cataract coach, people think that, oh, all I do is teach. No, I learn much more than I teach. I get 50 or 60 videos a week. I watch all of them. And I learn, I learn so much. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, when I have residents or fellows that are struggling with cataract, like I said, okay, so for my next OR with you, I want you to tell me, I want you to watch 5 videos every day in Cataract Coach. That's the homework. You gotta watch 5 videos, and I want you to tell me
what did you learn?
What do you remember the most? What? And as I think that you have a gift. You have a gift the way you narrate them, the way you. You know, you engage people and you're very good at that. So I think no wonder, like, your session at ESCRS, like, they need to give you the main, the main auditorium. Like, people could not fit, right?
They gave me a big room. We filled every seat and there were 200 people outside the door that couldn't get in.
And you want to know something? I submitted a course on infectious keratitis. I had really top faculty, I had Prashna from Aravind, and I had like Jennifer Rose from Stanford, and it was a really good and it was at the same time as your everyone was telling me, you're gonna be empty, man, like no one's gonna show up there because everyone's gonna be kind of a coach. But we managed to have about 90% which I said at the end, I said, I want to thank everyone, because there was no cataract and no refractive in this session, and cataract coach is going strong in another room, and you guys are here. So that's, yeah.
You know, it's the amount of learning we can do right now online is just unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yep.
I mean, I'm not a cornea specialist, but when I was teaching residents a few years ago, I had to learn DMEC so I could teach them. So I could do. We're the county hospital. These are charity patients. They need a DMEC. So I learned by watching videos, and then I started doing it. And then I started teaching residents how to do DMEC. It's not that hard. You can do it.
it is the way I learned DMEC is I saw Dr. Bennett doing some but he was like a glaucoma attending. I didn't work with him, and then I was doing all this complex. It was like my second year in faculty. I was doing all this complex DSEC, and that we had the Pan American meeting in Bogota, Colombia, and I thought I was gonna be the big shot there, like. My session was called, complex endothelial keratoplasty. So I was like, I'm just going to show these videos. And here I am like presenting. And then I get like Nicolas Pereira from Sorocaba, Brazil, who's like an incredible DMEC surgeon. Yeah. And he's like doing the same thing with very, tubes and iris, and he's cutting the tissue. And I said, Nico, wow, like you got to teach me how to do this. So we go have a beer after the session, and he pulls out his laptop and he's showing me and sharing the videos. And I'm like, so I saw his videos, and then I came back and I started doing DMEC. I learned from Nico. Yeah.
One of the important things is that we have to keep learning the rest of our careers. Because when you finish your cornea fellowship, two of them, by the way, cornea and ocular nerves and UVIs, that's like 12, 15 years ago. Half these things didn't exist. You got to keep learning. You have to keep learning every day the rest of your life.
And I agree. And for example, I never did like a suture IOL as a fellow. Like that stuff was not very popular. Those, like, now it's very, it's very common to see an anterior segment surgeon doing that. It used to be retina will do it, at least at Bascom Palmer during that time. And I didn't. But then you start learning. You start like,
We all remember back. Like, I remember many, many years ago when I was a resident, there was the one faculty member who never learned phaco. 25 years ago, I had a faculty member who was very prominent, who only did extra caps. And I just thought, how crazy is that? Because he just never learned how to. And so we obviously have to keep learning every day, every year, the rest of our lives. And in the future, kind of a good acid test is 10 years from now, if you're doing surgery the same way as you did today, that's you got to keep advancing.
Yeah, I know. I think you have to be open to Like no, and then the things are gonna change, like with AI. Like, oh my God, like the stuff I saw at ESCRS, it's amazing.
What'd you see that was so amazing? What struck your fancy?
So in in infectious keratitis, like the machines do better than we do. Like they really have the I'm making the difference between, okay, this ulcer is bacterial or fungal. The
Right.
machine, like they show pictures to experts in the field of cornea, like experts, and then they train the machines, and the machines did better. Like amazing. I
I
mean,
mean,
that's
we learned this like 5 years ago. 5 years ago, when they came up with the original fundus photos for retina,
yeah, for the
and then you realized AI could tell based on a fundus photo, age of the patient within 2 years. They could tell from a fundus photo, male or female, with like 98% accuracy. I can't do that. I have no idea. I cannot.
But it and I think that they don't even know how exactly
You don't
they don't
know.
know, right? The machine doesn't know how. Yeah, amazing. Like how is
You,
now?
right. It, the data goes in, you get the processing, you get the data out, and you're not exactly sure why. But yeah, the AI now for a fundus photo of the retina can predict male or female with 98% accuracy. And to be frank, I have no, I can't do it. I have no idea.
No, no way. No, that I mean everything that's machine learning with imaging is it's started with that, and but for not just slit lamp but confocal microscopy, they can diagnose acanthamoeba. I mean we're gonna be able, like they can train the microscopes that, I mean they can train the photography to diagnose fungal keratitis by reading KOH, stains. You don't have to get the microbiologist, so you just put it in an app. Is this, I do the staining, I take a picture. Yeah, that you should start natamycin. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a new world, and that's why I said I'm so impressed by the young generation. The young generation just it's incredible. I mean, you see now the applicants are applying to Bascom Palmer for residency or even for your fellowship. They're incredible. Like I can't.
Every time I interview, I was like, there's no way I will match now.
Right,
No.
exactly. I'll be
No.
doing family practice. I won't be doing ophthalmology. No way. I
Oh,
won't get it.
yeah. They're really, they're doing a lot of stuff. I mean, I think that's the topic that you, because I saw the interview you did or the podcast you did with Neil Patricia, about the publications and like having medical students like
You're right.
concentrate in publishing and publishing. I wanted them go to the hospital and do the rounds and see the patients, but that's another topic of discussion. But yeah, I the CVs we're getting are incredible, incredible.
To bring up on that topic though, I think a lot of the peer-reviewed publication, it's not as strong as it was before. And I think part of the problem is now, if I send a paper in to be peer-reviewed, it's not my peers reviewing it. The ophthalmologists who I don't know, who have their own biases looking at my paper. Whereas if I want real peer review, I put on Cataract Coach, and today, 30,000 ophthalmologists will see it today. That's peer review.
You they'll definitely let you know if it's a good video or not a good video, or a good paper or not a good paper.
Well, part of the thing, when I presented at the ESCRS, I did the Best of Cataract Coach. Well, do you know why it's so highly rated and so popular? Because I'll go on my phone and I'll look. What were the most popular videos I had in the last year? What got the most comments, the most controversial, the most likes? I'll choose those and make a. And I mean, it's funny, I just posted recently. This month is the first month where my Instagram alone is more than 1 million views a month. YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, forget that. Just Insta alone's 1 million a month. It's crazy. I mean,
And people are really appreciate like when you like if you I know you upload videos all the time, but if you stop for like a week, try that. You'll stop for a week and they'll you'll start getting emails like people's like, hey, where are you? Like, because there I've had sometimes that I like I've had a few months now that I've been pretty silent with my, and then people like ask like, hey, what are you doing?
You
Like,
okay?
well, yeah,
Yeah, you okay?
okay, yeah, like we need the videos, and they ask you for advice, and yeah, so
Well, one thing I
yeah.
love about your videos is you take a very, very complicated case that honestly, a case that sometimes I would be afraid to do, and you kind of make it simplified. So it's like, oh, maybe I could do that. After I watch your video, a very difficult case where I thought would be impossible, I think, maybe I could do that then. You give me a little bit of confidence. I like that.
Thank you. I one of the things I try to do, especially with ocular surface, is to give them a follow-up. You know, this is a month later. Like, if you do a sled and it looks beautiful in a month, but it may not look beautiful 6 months later. So I was like, hey, remember that case? You know, and I try to like, this is a follow-up from that, and try to give them some follow-up, because in cataract surgery, like if it goes well, it's going to stay well most likely, right? But in cornea and ocular surface, a lot of things can happen, and you want to make sure that if something bad happens, and why did it happen, you know, our patient had a rejection because the immunosuppression was stopped, or we didn't do
Right.
not enough, or think, you know, what problems happened, and how to solve them.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think you have a great way of kind of presenting that material. And in the podcast description down below, we're going to put a link to your Instagram. Whatever links you give me, I'll put it down in the description below. So if you're watching this podcast right now or listening to it and you want to learn from Cornea Poppy, the link is down below.
I have a few videos to send to your so I'll be sending them soon.
Whatever you got, we're happy if you try. I mean, like I said, one of the reasons I love your videos is I learned from them. Even now, I'm 50 plus years old. I can watch your video and think, oh, you know what? Maybe I could do that too. That you make a complicated case seem a little bit more straightforward.
I mean, but I it you you can definitely do. I mean, you're just being being humble. But I think if you have the dexterity, like you have the surgical hands, and you have the tools. I think, you know, for example, I remember at Faco Caribe, I was watching some of the live surgeries by Igamet, and he says something that really like caught my attention, and I'm like, ah, oh, that's dumb. I should. You know, why I'm not doing that. So it says, you gotta have the right instruments. Like, it just makes it so much easier. Get a good set of, like, I don't know, no financial interest, but MST forceps. Like, it just
Whatever.
may, it is, if you're struggling with, like, you, then you get, you know, get anxious and get frustrated. But if you have, like, the right instruments, you plan your surgeries, you can, you understand the concepts behind, like concept behind corneal surgery, ocular surface surgery, and cataract surgery, you can do, you know, anything you want.
No, I think that's a great point. I mean, obviously, hands are the most important thing. And your knowledge. But after that, yeah, having great instruments makes a world of difference, obviously. Yeah, I
All
mean,
right,
I
man.
just, I mean, I even though from my perspective, I recently was using a new phaco machine in the operating room, and I won't say the brand name, it doesn't really matter, but it was a brand new machine. And I was like, cases that I thought were very difficult, I did some brunescent cataracts that day, I did some dense white cataracts. It was half the phaco energy that I would put in normally. And I was like, whoa. And these dense brunescent cataracts, these white, dense white cataracts, post-op day one, I saw them. The corneas were clear. I couldn't believe it. I was
That's
expecting
good.
at least a little corneal edema. I mean, I put in a lot of phaco energy. So yeah,
Amazing.
the new instruments, new technology, it's only getting better and better.
Yeah, you. I think it's you have to be open to try them, and we have different phaco machines in the hospital. Like, some surgeons like one type, or with some others, and I encourage the fellows to try different ones, because getting out of the zone, comfort zone is good. Like, you learn your, you know, if you do a venturi pump and versus a peristaltic pump, you gotta know the difference, and when you're there, you know.
You have to push yourself. You got to push yourself a little bit out of the comfort zone in order to expand your knowledge, expand your hands-on, get bigger experience, and become a better surgeon. One day, I will be as good as Cornea Poppy.
You're just making fun of me now.
Wait, do you take a 50-year-old fellow? Can I come to your place? Am I too old?
You can come. I'll teach you ocular surface and cornea, and you can do all the cataracts.
Yeah. If I'm your fellow, you're gonna call me abuelito.
Abuelito.
If you don't like old grandpa.
Oh, but yeah, we'll call you cataract grandpa.
Viejito, which is like old man.
Yep.
But no, I think it's an amazing thing that you're doing there. Now, what advice do you have for a young surgeon? So cataract coach and our podcast especially, most of our listeners, we have all the age groups from ophthalmologist age kind of 28 to probably like 88, but most of them are in their 30s and 40s. So what advice for a young ophthalmologist do you have to kind of really hone your hands and get better surgical skills and kind of stay at that cutting edge? What advice?
I think that's a good question. I think that you have to record your surgeries. You have to record them. Yeah. And try to record all of them, like, because you never know when you're going to have that problem. You can look back and look at your, even if everything goes well, you look at your surgeries, you time your surgeries. Not that it's a competition of who does the fastest, but you try to get efficient. You try to, be critical of yourself, and then don't be afraid of sharing, like, you know, go to with other colleagues, like show your videos and share. I love the M&M, like the conferences where we discuss cases and we criticize, our complications. We do that with the fellows once a month. We show videos. And I think that's I think if you get a complication, especially as a young surgeon, like, you know, see why you have. When I get complications with the fellows, I try not to get upset. I get upset when they start repeating the same problem over and over. I said, like,
right.
Yeah. So, but if you don't repeat your complications, learn from them, and then walk with the patient, like give them your cell phone, like solve the problem, and try not to repeat it, learn why that happens. I think that's important. Be up to date. Don't be afraid to go out and come. You don't have to go to all the conferences, but in fact, you don't even have to get out of your house. You can just watch, like your website. But there's so many other websites that that have videos, and they're amazing.
Yeah, I think it's the commitment to keep learning, probably.
I think,
and then, like, to be self-critical, watch your own videos and say, what could you do better?
Don't be afraid of getting off the comfort zone. Like, if you had enough experience, go out and do some mission work. Like, I've learned a lot by operating in situations where I don't have, the best machines, the best, like, you have it. You don't have, like, 5-isoscholastic to keep refilling. You have to be efficient. Like, I do a lot of mission. I do a lot of cataract surgery in Mexico and for people with low income, and that's tough, man. They have pupils on dilate, and
tell me about that. That's in Monterey.
No, it's in the state of Chihuahua. I open a practice there. There's a private practice part that supports. We've done about 5,000 charity cases there.
Wow, that's a lot.
What? Yeah, in 5 years now, we partnered with a NGO, and it's been good. I used to go to, when I was in Pittsburgh, we used to go to Honduras. I kept going after my residency and helped the residents from Pitt. But then, since I'm from Mexico, I said, well, I got to do something for my part of the world, and we started that.
Plus, you have the right. You have the right accent.
I can communicate well there. I've been really looking forward to join Elena Varaker. I collaborate a lot with a group from Faco Extrema, and they go to Africa a lot. I haven't had a chance to go, but I really would love to do something like that,
There's some incredible surgeons from Latin America. Like you say,
they really are.
Pico Carib. These are some really, really incredible surgeons.
I'm gonna move to this because of my battery. I'm gonna plug in my. Yeah, here we go. There are some really good surgeons, and I picked a lot of tips from over there. Yeah.
No, beyond good. There are some incredible surgeons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I watch them operate, and I just think, like, I have imposter syndrome. Like, these guys are so good.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's amazing. Even in your place in Chihuahua, in 5 years, 5,000 cases, that's 1,000 cases a year. That's 20 a week. You're keeping busy.
Yeah, for, I used to go there every 2 weeks, the first year and a half. But now I rarely go. We have a very good team, and if they watch this podcast, I thank them and congratulate them, because we one of them he worked in the clinic for 2.5 years, and then he said, I want to be a retina specialist. I said, okay, I'm gonna send you to LB Prasad. And he went there a year and a half, did a lot of retina surgery,
Yeah.
learned from really, really, really skilled surgeons, and he was already uveitis trained, so he the medical part was there already. So he's now doing a great job. So yeah, the key has been to partner with this NGO that supports the charity, and we only charge the patients. The by law over there, patients need to have like a CBC and a chemistry
Okay.
panel, the border between Mexico and the US is where the most unhealthy diabetics live. Like the worst food of Mexico and the worst food from the US. It's delicious though, but everyone is walking with sugars of 300. Like even if we do pre-ops and 15 to 20% of our cases get canceled the day of surgery because of we can't keep up with the sugars. Like we do surgeries with sugars really high, but there's a limit to we have to be. Safety first.
No,
High
that
blood pressure. High blood pressure is a huge problem. I mean,
right.
yeah.
Well, you were saying too, how this fellow went to LB Prasad in India. A lot of, I just spent a couple weekends in India in July. I go to India at least once or twice a year every year. I travel a lot.
Yeah.
The volume of patients
That's unbelievable.
is unbelievable. You can say, I want to specialize in some very unusual disease, and you can have a line out your door of those exact patients, and you can never, ever finish the backlog, ever.
Yeah, I mean,
It's unbelievable.
in the topic of India, and I'm biased with LB Prasad because they're like it's like my sister institution. I work with them for 12 years now, but lately I've been doing some studies, RCTs with a group from Arvind, and I was visiting Arvind. I feel every ophthalmologist needs to travel once in their career to LB Prasad and I mean, when you see the surgeons at Arvind doing cataract surgery, it's like an orchestra. It's like, it's amazing. Like, it's so beautiful. It's perfect.
It's very, very normal to see one surgeon doing 100 cataract surgeries in a day. Very normal.
Easily. And with this peaceful, relaxed, the case is like so complex and they make it look so easy and really efficient. And no, I mean, talking about very well organized systems. The two institutions are very different, but they provide incredible care, like incredible care.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the beauty right now that we have with everything being online, is that we kind of like equalize the playing field. We can learn from everyone. I learned from the Indian surgeons. You know what else I learned a lot from? The Brazilian surgeons, Brasileiros.
Yeah,
Oh,
Vasquez.
these are some incredible surgeons too. So I learned from incredible surgeons across the globe. If you look at Cataract
Yeah.
Coach, as you see, I feature videos from surgeons
Yeah,
from
I've heard of
every corner of the entire planet. And
Yeah.
there's so much to learn. And I think the beauty is that kind of we bring it all together and share together.
I was at Brasker's when was 2 years ago? And I was very impressed. Like it was like a 5,000 people there, and it was incredible level of academics and the video, yeah.
Brasker's is Brazilian cataract refractive surgery video, the
Yep.
ASC for Brazil. But I got to tell you, the more I travel, like you saw ESC, or that's the European
I was very
category,
impressed.
incredible. It's on the upswing. The last ASCRS meeting here in the US was honestly a bit of a letdown. The attendance was so poor. It felt like the energy was dwindling. Whereas when I go to the ESCRS, it is like pow, exciting, big energy, growing every year. I think it would actually benefit a lot of American surgeons, and our number one market for Cataract Coach USA. Travel, go to these international meetings, you will love it.
We need to do courses here for ASCRS, for AAO, and make it dynamic, make it, not the classic, teaching, but make it fun, make it like we have
Sometimes
to
hard though. It's hard to change their way of
Oh no,
thinking.
I know. No, I know, I
And
know, I know.
I've not been successful in doing that. I've tried and I'm not that good. So I'd rather do best of cataract coach at ESCRS
Wow.
in Europe instead
Yeah.
of ASCRS. I'll do both.
That's a bit.
But ESCRS is going to be a lot more fun and a lot more engaging and a
Are
lot
you
more.
doing Orlando this year in AAO? Something with
I'm actually not going to go to AAO this year because number one, I don't like
Why?
Orlando.
Yeah,
Orlando,
it's too
listen, Orlando.
spread. It's too spread. It's theme parks and lots of resorts,
I'm an old man. My kids are in their 20s. I don't have anything to do with, I don't need Disneyland. I just don't. Or Disney World. So.
No, but what I'm saying is it's hard. Like, for example, in Chicago, if you have two dinners and you want to catch up with your buddies, like you can go to one dinner and then you can like leave early, catch up with the other one, and then go. Everything is closed on the main street there, like
Well, I
missing.
don't.
And in Orlando, you can because you have to travel so much between places. Yeah, you can't
And
walk and.
even at the big meetings, I only do dinners with friends. I don't do any corporate dinners. I don't.
Wow.
I can. I'm happy to pay for my own dinner as long as
Yeah,
I'm with friends. I don't pay.
I think that's the way to do it,
Even us. Listen, I just we're doing this podcast now because we saw each other. I saw you in Copenhagen. I was
Yeah,
like,
I saw you.
you and me to Copenhagen.
I saw you in the lobby there, yeah, it's a small world.
But because even even though we're both here in the US practicing, you know that the ESCRS is that's a really good meeting.
I was very impressed. Like the exhibit that really caught my attention. The exhibit room where all the companies had a lot of things in their booth to engage people, like wet lab simulation, and they can let you try all this. And it was yeah, it was incredible. Like it was packed with people. I don't know how many people were there? 15,000 people?
Don't know the numbers,
It was so big.
but ASCRS early this year was empty.
But I think it was also that in LA they had the recent fires and people were, I don't know. I mean, I wanna like
Maybe, well, you know what? We'll find out next year the ASCRS in Washington, D.C., but
Washington, D.C.
honestly, I don't think it's going to be super popular either. I think it's
You
just.
know, I have to say that we were supposed to have the WorldConnect Congress happens, I think, every 4 or 5 years. And we were supposed to partner with ASCRS, and I don't know the politics behind, but it never happened. So we had for the first time our WorldConnect Congress, a freestanding WorldConnect Congress, and we had it in D.C. in March, and it was great. Like I was small because there's not, but it all the rooms were packed and it was very well attended. I you know
Fantastic.
I, yeah.
That's fantastic. But I think the world is becoming a smaller place, which is a good thing, both online and obviously we go to these meetings too. But I think the beauty here is we're all going to learn together and we're definitely going to keep learning from Corny and Poppy.
Well,
So
thank you. You now motivated me to go back and start uploading more videos. So I'll upload.
Guillermo, can you
Yeah.
believe it? We've been talking for
We're
already
at.
1 hour.
Wow.
Time
That's
flies
amazing.
when you're having fun. And I want to do this. Please give me some sort of good video. I'm featured on Cataract Coach the day after your podcast. We're all going to learn together. And if you give me your links for your Instagram, whatever, I'll put it down in the links below.
Right. I'm sending. Just 2 weeks ago, we did a really cool Morgani and cataract, and I'll have good photos, and we'll share it with all of you.
All
Okay.
good stuff to learn.
All right.
Thank you. Everyone in the podcast, and
Thank
I
you
want
for
to.
having me, and yeah,
Oh.
and congratulations for all the success in Cataract Coach. Keep doing it because a lot of people are benefiting from it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And remember, tell you this, you are one of the surgeons that I really look up to because you have
Thank you.
such an incredible surgical skill. You really do. You're very modest, so you'll never admit it. But if I have a bad ocular, fixing me. You're gonna take my salivary gland. You're gonna do a brain transplant for me too, and you're gonna fix my eyes. You're amazing.
Well, we'll do something cool in London next year in ASCRS. All right.
That's a good plan. I want to remind our listeners of I got a new Catter Coach podcast every single week. It's on Amazon, Apple, Spotify, Google, anywhere you get your podcasts, you find the Catter Coach podcast. Plus, of course, we have a new Catter Coach video every single day, 2,700 videos and counting. And of course, we're going to have Dr. Mesk. Same reconstruction, and we're all going to learn together. So until next time, I'll catch you later.